Today on Mr. Media, I'll welcome film director and editor Roger Nygaard back to the show for the third time. Today's topic, Season 8 of Larry David's Curb Your Enthusiasm, on which Roger is an editor. Stick around and prepare to get uncomfortable. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. You know, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Stop by and check it out. There are more than 700 archived celebrity and pop culture interviews for your listening pleasure. The show is brought to you today by Audible. Audible is offering Mr. Media listeners a free audiobook download and a 14-day trial offer to give you a chance to check out their very cool service. I love listening to books on tape. If you've never tried it before, actors or sometimes the authors themselves read to you. It's great for the commute, the beach, or even unwinding before bed. You can choose a free audiobook from Audible's enormous library of titles, including today's top comedy bestsellers, such as Tina Fey's Bossy Pants, read by Tina Fey, or the Woody Allen collection, read by Woody Allen. You know, I saw that on the list and I thought, I got to own that one. That's a good one. Or they also have Are You There, Vodka? It's Me, Chelsea, written and read by Chelsea Handler. You could also download The Profiler, not a comedy, but written by famed criminal profiler Pat Brown and yours truly, which Pat will read to you personally. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/radio. Again, that's audibletrial.com/radio for your free audiobook. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience that hopes Curb Your Enthusiasm and Larry David will go on forever in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. The last time Roger Nygaard was a guest on this show, he was in a video editing suite in Hollywood, and I was where I always am, in the living room studio with the whorehouse red walls. Our subject that day was the release of the expanded edition of Nygaard's terrific, globe-trotting documentary, The Nature of Existence, as well as the passing of one of its subjects, Irvin Kershner, director of the Star Wars sequel, The Empire Strikes Back. In the course of setting the shot, Roger mentioned that we needed to be done on time because Larry David was likely to be walking through the door behind him at any time. Back up a minute, I said. Larry David? The Larry David I'm thinking of? Well, it turns out that Roger, on top of his many other credits, has been one of two video editors on season 6, 7, and 8 of David's long-running HBO show, Curb Your Enthusiasm. And yes, my mind was blown a little. I didn't see that one coming. So I made him promise to come back on our show to talk about Season 8, which begins on Sunday, July 10th. As for Roger, I was mostly aware of his documentary work until that time. In addition to Existence, he also directed Trekkies, Trekkies 2, and several other films, including some documentary and comedy stuff. But it turns out he's also quite accomplished in TV sitcoms, having worked on The Office, The Bernie Mac Show, and the very funny but very short-lived Mind of the Married Man. Roger Nygaard, welcome back to Mr. Media.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I feel like a veteran, my third time here.
I guess you kind of are. I think four is the most anyone's come back. So
I'm going for that record. I'm going for five.
Hey, you are welcome. You're always always good company to have on the show. Always entertaining, and man, you get some good projects to work on. Now, I still can't get over how casually you dropped the Curb Your Enthusiasm bomb on me that day. I'm figuring you must be great at parties with that little revelation.
Well, you know, for fans of the show, for certainly, you know, some people are really freaked out and weirded out and as you mentioned, really uncomfortable watching the show. And that translates into this fear they have of Larry David. Some people are just more afraid of Larry David than they were of Osama bin Laden for some reason, because it seems like, you know, when you're it's the character on the show that he plays anyway, he could walk into any situation and you can have a slight altercation with him and he will just tear you apart over it, right? Or if you make a slight, you know, social faux pas, or you take too much time in line getting a little bit of ice cream, he will call you out on it. And so people hate being called out, right? But in their daily life, you know, it doesn't happen that often, but it happens all the time in the show. And that's what people, I think, are most fearful of.
Are there that many people? Maybe out in Hollywood, are there that many people that worry about running into Larry in public situations? I mean, it's not an issue for me here in Florida. Although I understand maybe he has family down here, but I'm not too worried about it day to day.
Well, he's all over the place. You know, you'll see him. You can see him anytime. You know, in West Los Angeles, that's where he lives and that's where he eats and plays golf. And so it's not that hard to run into Larry David. The funny thing is when you do. The contrast between who he really is and his character is kind of startling because he's such a nice guy and really gracious. The character, you know, has elements of who he is, exaggerated, of course, for comedy. But, you know, as far as like somebody to work with, he's been the easiest person to work with, you know, maybe in my entire career.
Wow. Well, and, you know, I was trying to remember where it was, but somewhere in the past year, saw an interview with him, and it wasn't like in one of these kind of Jay Leno hyped up kind of atmospheres, but it was just sitting down and talking about some of his work and things, and he just seemed, he was definitely not the Larry David on Curb. He was, you know, and or even the Larry David in Whatever Works or any of that kind of thing. It was just, you know, he just seemed like a fascinating guy to talk to, very, very even. And I thought, you know, and that's why I was kind of curious, as I guess anyone would be, when you're working with him, as you do, which guy do you see, you know, off screen? I'm assuming it's the genial, you know, guy who's got a job to do.
Yeah, well, you know, you see parts of both, though, because the show is about, to a great extent, things he experiences in his own life. And so you get to witness him experiencing some of those things in his own life. You know, last season, I remember maybe the biggest event of the entire season was when Larry's BlackBerry automatically updated his crossword puzzle software and completely changed, you know, the way, or maybe even slightly changed, but it was changed enough that it annoyed him. So weeks were spent going back and forth with the top programmers at BlackBerry trying to get his BlackBerry back to the way it was, which it turned out was not possible. He had to buy a whole new older version or some other BlackBerry because his had somehow been permanently, you know, made into some new version. And so anyway, it was one long ordeal so that he could do his crossword puzzles the way he was used to doing his crossword puzzles.
So you got your own personal episode.
Well, don't be surprised if you see something like that appear, you know, in season 9 or 10 or something.
Well, I like the sound of that there might be a season 9 or 10. I'm not asking you, but it would be nice.
Well, nobody ever knows, you know. It's like the end of the season. We all feel pretty good about it, and I season 8 will be no exception. I think if you're a Curb Your Enthusiasm fan, season 8 should be very satisfying for you. I think it's as funny as any season. But then it's just a matter of, well, will there be a next season? Everybody asks. And Larry goes, oh, I don't know. And generally, you know, time goes by and he starts writing the scripts and then he calls HBO and says, you know, I think I'll do another season. So that's what's happened every year. Will it happen again? You know, I don't know yet. We don't know.
Now, I saw, peeking at the HBO site, that the first episode of season 8 is called The Divorce. And a lot of the seasons, certainly the latter seasons, when you've worked, I think, they've had a theme to each season. Something's been going on. There was the Seinfeld reunion. There was Larry on Broadway, things like that. Does this season have a theme, or is it a series of less connected episodes?
Well, I guess, you know, the title really is a tip-off. You know, I'm not really allowed to disclose the story, but, I mean, if you recall how season 7 ended, it ended with Larry back together with Cheryl on the couch, and they're together, right? The whole season is about them getting back together after, you know, splitting up. And so season 8 begins right where season 7 left off with Larry David and his wife Cheryl on the couch, and the episode's called The Divorce, so you can presume things don't go that well in the next few seconds after where season 7 ended.
Well, we have to remind people that he so wanted to get back together with Cheryl that he put together that whole Seinfeld reunion, essentially, just to get another shot with his ex-wife. It was
right. But then he's like can't help himself, right? Yeah. And he has to be who he is. And, you know, Cheryl, as you recall in the last scene, he asks Cheryl, do you respect wood? Because she left a ring stain. She put a glass, a white glass, on the wooden table and left a ring stain, which Larry got blamed for. And so he finally found the culprit was Cheryl. So you can't let that slide by once he finds out she's the culprit. He's got to call her out on it, which is what Larry does. He calls people out on the things they do, right, when they're being deceptive or doing something socially inappropriate. And, of course, that's going to lead to friction.
Well, you know, he's got to be Larry. He can't be, you know, he can't be someone else. He's got to be who he is. I wanted to ask you, on the technical side, with what you do on the show, the public, the media, we've all heard the stories of how Larry starts taping each episode with kind of a rough concept, and then the story and the dialogue take shape almost on the fly. And Cheryl Hines and Jeff Garland have both been on Mr. Media and have talked about both the challenges and the rewards of that kind of process. But what I'm wondering about from you is, does that make it harder or easier for the editor on an episode who has to put it all together? Because it hasn't been it hasn't come together from a script. You don't have a script to fall back on.
It makes it vastly more difficult to work from no script, because then you have to, in a sense, create the scene in the editing room based on the raw material they give you while they're improvising. They do start out with a script, and I dug out a couple of copies here. You know, this is one of the scripts, right? And this is the front cover page. And, you constantly get updates. And so here's show number one. Season 8, right? And so you start out, you can see that there's a one paragraph there for the first scene. And it says we run the final scene from season 7. And so we start out with a little update on season 7, the final scene. And then it tells what happens next. So as the editor, I work from this and the footage and craft the best scene that I can. And it takes much longer than what you call a circled takes show, where they've worked from a script, and then the director tells the script the continuity person which are his favorites, and he or she circles those takes. And so you just have to work primarily from the favorite takes. And that goes much more quickly. You don't have to help create the story in the editing room. It's theoretically been written, and it's in a finished form in the script. So in a sense, you know, I've heard editing described as the final rewrite of the script. And with Curb Your Enthusiasm and an improv show, which works from just this basic outline, you know, maybe a paragraph per scene, it's very much a rewrite, the final rewrite of the script, because the script is continually being written, and the script is not finished until we do our final mix, because we're adding lines all the time. And one of the secrets of the show, if you watch for this, watch closely, you'll notice that a lot of the lines, especially storylines that set things up, like, you remember that hammer you saw in, you know, scene 3, and, you know, that's in my hand now? You know, we'll come up with a line. Larry will think of something to say that will reestablish the premise, because you don't laugh at the punchline if you've forgotten the setup. And sometimes while improvising, they forget or they don't cover something as strongly as they should. And so we put a lot of lines on the backs of heads. So watch for loop lines or lines that are on the back of Larry's head. Primarily Larry does most of this because he's available. He's in the room with us, right? And it's easier to get him than to bring the other actors back. But they're brought back too. And so lots of lines, a lot of story point lines are delivered that way, as well as funnier versions of jokes and or new jokes are written all the time and dropped in when you can't see the actors' faces.
It's just such an amazing process. Now, how long does it take? And you told me before we went on, there's actually two of you that have alternated even and odd episodes, I guess, for season 6, 7, 8. What's the other fellow's name?
Steve Rash, who's been there essentially from the beginning on the show.
Okay. I want to make sure we give him plenty of credit as well. So how long – now, a typical sitcom scripted, I'm guessing, probably has to be edited – you know, within a short a set period of time, especially for a network show. Does a show like Curb take longer to edit because of the way it's constructed?
Much longer. Yeah, we spend about 2 months per 30-minute episode, which is substantially longer than typical, a typical TV show. And part of it is because it takes so much longer to craft a scene out of the improv raw footage, and also because Larry is very hands-on. And so I'll cut the first version of the show, and then Larry will come in and sit down with me and sometimes some of the other producers slash writers, and we'll go through all the raw footage together. We'll watch it together, and Larry will say, oh, I like that joke, or that's a good premise. And so I'll mark those, and then he'll leave, and then I'll squeeze all that new stuff into my cut, which will then get fatter and fatter. And so until we have maybe a 45-minute cut on average for a 30-minute show, on network television, shows are 22 minutes or 21 and change. So you've got to, you know, if we had to cut it to that time format, we'd have to cut it down to 22 minutes. But because it's for HBO, we have to cut it to 29 minutes and 58 seconds or under. And so a lot of the shows are 29 minutes and 58 seconds because we cram as much funny as we can into the show. There are a few shows that go longer. They ask HBO, Larry asks, hey, can I go longer on an episode or two? You know, a special episode like last season, the table read, you know, when the Seinfeld actors were all there, and there was so much great stuff that HBO gave us extra time for that one. There's an episode this season that I edited with Bill Buckner. I don't know if you recall Bill Buckner.
Of course. Bill Through My Legs Buckner.
Exactly, yeah. Lost the World Series in 1983, I think it was, or 4 or 5, something in the early 80s.
Awesome.
Anyway, he's in episode number 9, which is probably my favorite episode of the episodes I cut. And it's a longer episode because it worked. It felt longer, and you know, some episodes seem to be able to support that. And so, yeah, watch for the Bill Buckner episode, episode 9. That's probably the one that I enjoyed the most out of the whole season.
Well, we need to take a quick break. I want to come back. Got plenty more questions. This is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to and hopefully watching the Mr. Media interview with film and television director and editor Roger Nygaard. And we'll be right back.
Hey, did you know that you can listen to the latest Mr. Media on your phone with the Stitcher app? Stitcher is smart radio for your smartphone. Mr. Media is on demand and on the go with Stitcher. Download Stitcher for your phone today. Get the free download at Stitcher.com. That's Stitcher.com.
Hey, everybody. This is Kevin.com Brown from the Emmy Award-winning 30 Rock. And you know what? I wish I had 30 rocks to throw at Mr. Media's ass. Yeah.
This is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to and hopefully watching the Mr. Media interview with film and television director and editor Roger Nygaard. Roger, in the first segment, I had asked you if season 8 has kind of an overall theme, the way more recent seasons have, such as last year's Seinfeld reunion being nothing more than a giant scheme for Larry to get back together with Cheryl. Can you elaborate a little bit more on the upcoming season without giving too much away?
Yeah, see, it almost seems like Larry alternates, because you remember the season where he was in the producers on Broadway, and that had a very specific, you know, running story. And Larry, I guess, doesn't feel like he has to top himself every season with something bigger and grand or more grand. What he just wants to make sure that the show is funny. And this season, season 8, does not have as much of a running theme as last season did. And what ends up happening, at least, you know, from the perspective in the editing room, is that when there is less of an overall theme from episode to episode, there's less story, then we can keep more of the funny stuff. Because when there is a story continuing, you cannot really cut the story. You need the story. So we end up cutting jokes. So you actually get a funnier season, I think, in some respects, when there is less of an overrunning, overarching theme. So season 8 does have kind of a very flimsy overarching theme, but it's so flimsy as to be almost non-existent, and so the episodes really are almost all, you could say, are standalone episodes.
Got it, got it. Oh, that probably, a lot of people will enjoy that, and then, of course, they can pop up in any order, almost.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, you know, the theme as it is, I can tell you this, is that Larry goes to New York City. And so half of the season Larry spends in New York and half he spends in Los Angeles. The reason for his trip to New York is kind of the flimsy overarching theme, but it's the fact that it's so minuscule is what makes it so funny. You know, his reason for going to New York is so tiny. That's part of what's so funny about it, I think.
Watching the show over the years, and Seinfeld even before that, always reminded me when I was very young, I did a lot of magazine work, and back when there was magazine work to be done, and I did a lot of long features. And I had an editor who said to me, look, here's what we want you to do. Take the story, and instead of writing about the entire – think of the story as the beach full of sand. But instead of writing about the entire beach, all the sand, pick up one little tiny pebble of sand. Put it under a magnifying glass, and that's what I want you to write about. And it seems to me sometimes that an episode with Larry, or as again, Seinfeld before it, it kind of is about nothing, and it's taking something that most people would just take for granted in their lives, or they would just kind of brush off, and it becomes everything to him.
I said Larry to what Larry, you're like the crusader for the common man. You know, you're out there defending us all over the social injustices that we all face at some time or another. You know, the guy in the carpool lane or the person who takes too long in line or the you know, whatever. And that's what's part of what's, you know, satisfying about it as well as it being funny, or you could say it's uncomfortable. It kind of depends on which side, who you're identifying with. You know, I don't get uncomfortable watching this show. I guess it's hard for me to say because I see it, you know, day in and day out. Because I'm identifying with Larry, and in the editing room we call him. He's our guy. You know, okay, we gotta be aware of who our guy is, and that he's our hero, right? Larry's, you know, he's the protagonist of the show. So you can't really you don't want to dislike the protagonist, and I think that's what's great about Larry is that he is, despite even in his angriest yelling rants, I think he's still so likable.
Some people might disagree, but yeah.
Oh, totally. I know. There are people who completely disagree with that. But that's how I see the character.
Well, and I guess, I was born in New York. I grew up in New Jersey. I watched the show, and again, Seinfeld before that, and I always feel like I know these people. I know people in the Midwest, maybe in California, they don't know these people. I grew up around these people. I still know these people. And I'm very, you know, it's like, okay, it's just, you know.
I think you'll enjoy this change of venue to New York City where Larry interacts with the New Yorkers and the New York scene and the New York way of doing things and, you know, eating lunch outside and going to museum openings. And there's a one show that I cut that's a really funny show with a comedian named Robert Smigel.
Oh, sure.
Probably heard of, you know, Triumph the Insult Dog.
Seriously gay duo.
And he plays a character in the show, which is hysterical. And between he and Larry, when they were improvising together, it was very difficult to cut those scenes because they were laughing so much. But you got to find a way. So they'd laugh and they'd back up. Okay, say that again. And they'd back up two lines and say it again, and maybe get two lines further, and then another big laugh and back up again. And so it makes the editing more difficult, but also you know that you're onto something. When people make Larry laugh, it's, you know, Larry knows he's doing something right because, you know, he completely judges the show by what entertains him and what makes him laugh. So if you like the show, that means you and Larry have very similar sense of humor.
And I'll be getting my own HBO show soon. There you go. I like that. I like that line of thought. Now, I'm assuming that you're not on set while they're shooting.
No. I've visited set a couple of times usually when we do the cast and crew photo, we'll drop in, and food is always great on the Curb Your Enthusiasm set. But no, I'm spending the time in the editing room. Editing is a very time intensive job. It's really about sorting through volumes of information, coalescing it down to not just the best, but putting it in the right order as well, and that just takes a lot of time.
Kind of figured. And I'm thinking that you and your fellow editor, Steve, probably have a very different relationship with Larry David than the people who act in the show, the producers, even some of the other technical people, because the way I imagine the editing setup, but I would think it becomes an almost intimate relationship not that there's anything wrong with it. I couldn't resist that way. But because at times I imagine it's just you and he in a room looking at rushes, looking at scenes over and over again. Am I envisioning it the wrong way? Is it something different than that?
No, I mean, if you're going to pick an editor, if you're a director, and I've been on both sides, I've been the director and the editor, you've got to be with somebody you can stand for many hours a day. Because, you're spending a lot of time together. So if somebody rubs you the wrong way, it's just not going to work. And part of being a good editor is being that kind of person that you can get along with people and not rub them the wrong way for hours on end. And I guess being easygoing, right, is part of it. You really have to be an easygoing person, I think, to be an editor and not take things too seriously. And I certainly don't take life very seriously. If you've seen my documentary, The Nature of Existence, and maybe Trekkies and others, and I don't take life seriously. I think life is meant to be laughed at. I mean, that's how we deal with mortality is through humor and the very serious subjects. And Curb Your Enthusiasm, whether it's Curb Your Enthusiasm or my documentary or my films or whatever, comedy is about helping human beings deal with serious topics, because you'll go crazy if you take things too seriously, if you focus on your own mortality and the downside. I mean, there's a reason that we forget in life, we forget the difficult things that happen to us, the painful things, and we remember the good things. As time goes on, you remember mostly the good things that happened to you in your life, or that's what you focus on naturally. The brain does that naturally, because if it didn't, we'd go crazy. And I think shows like Curb Your Enthusiasm or comedy or my documentaries are part of that way of looking at the world.
It's interesting, as you were explaining all that, I was closing my eyes briefly and thinking that I was hearing the narrator for The Nature of Existence back at work again. That was good.
The same guy.
I know.
The same thought, the same philosophy. All my work is about, has humor, an element of humor to it, whether I'm directing, writing, editing, because that's, to me, that's the key. That's the key part of life, the key to enjoying life. One, at least, certainly one key, but it's certainly an important one.
Now, I want to come back into that editing suite again. So Larry's coming. Let's say you were still editing. I know the season's over. Larry is coming in an hour. He's going to be there. Do you make sure that you have something particular on hand because he likes to munch during editing, or eating drinks, or the topics not to bring up when you're going to be elbow to elbow with Larry David for maybe a couple hours.
Yeah, you don't feed Larry David. He's got very specific feeding regimens, which have to do with eating healthy.
Okay.
I mean, talking about, being sort of intimate with somebody, in a work situation, oftentimes when the show is finished, Larry goes on vacation, and often he'll go to Martha's Vineyard. And that's during the post-production. So what we do is we bring an editing system to Martha's Vineyard, put it in the guest house where Larry is living, and spent 6 weeks or, a couple months, Steve Rash, the other editor, and I will take turns. I went for the first 6 weeks during season 7. And so, I'm spending a month and a half editing on Martha's Vineyard with Larry, hanging out. And we eat lunch together. And he's got a chef that prepares his food just the way he likes it. And it's delicious. Having, your own personal chef, right? And I got to share that with Larry, as well as hanging out and chatting and talking about whatever, sports, the weather, girls, food, in between working in the editing room. that, but as far as, you know, what you have on hand in the editing room, he brings his own food, he comes with his own goodies, he knows what he wants for lunch. Look. So we can go to the same restaurants when we're, you know, getting takeout and stuff like that.
It does not sound like it sucks.
No, it's great. Working with Larry David is fantastic.
and now you're working with him, and do you actually, do you work for Larry? Is it Larry's production company that you work for, or do you work for HBO or someone else? How does that work?
Well, there's a production company that is specifically for the show, Curb Your Enthusiasm. And, but I feel like nothing matters except what Larry wants for the show. So he's the guy that we all work for, but he's also very collaborative. So you're working with him too. I mean, he knows what he wants through instinct. Generally, you're not going to convince him. If something feels wrong to him in an episode, you're not going to convince him otherwise. And I've seen people try over and over, you know, and oftentimes I've taken them aside when Larry's out of the room and said, you know, I've seen that look on Larry's face before. You can keep arguing the point, and you may move him a little bit, but just so you know, it's a lot of energy you're using that you might want to use somewhere productive. Because once he's got that look in his face, that's what's going to happen. Because, you know, the show is based on his instinct. When I asked him the story about casting of J.B. Smoove, who plays Leon.
Right, he's great.
Everybody's favorite. And, because I love this story. He said that when J.B. came in to read for the part, before he even opened his mouth to speak, he made one of those faces at Larry, and Larry started laughing. And I said, Larry, you know, did he already have the part at that point? He said, yeah, he had the part as soon as I was laughing, before he even opened his mouth and spoke. Because, you know, Larry feels something, and so that's what works.
Now, you've had 3 seasons of working together. And, you know, they may be 10 episode seasons, but obviously you're together a lot more than 10 weeks. You said it can take months. How different is your relationship today working with Larry than it was that first week coming in to edit? And Steve Rash, you said, has been there since the beginning. So you're the new guy, and suddenly you're elbow to elbow with Larry on his show. You're an experienced guy. Clearly, we've established that. But still, you know, how different is the relationship from week one to the end of season 3?
I'm trying to think if there is any difference in it. I can't think of anything. The first week is just like the last week, because if it's going to work from the beginning, it's going to work to the end. And I remember my job interview when I went in to meet Larry. You know, I got a phone call from somebody at HBO. When I was actually in India when I got the call, I was shooting The Nature of Existence, and I said, you know what, I'm out of town. I mean, I'm out of the country. I'd love to meet Larry, but I can't do it because I'm shooting my documentary. But if you don't have your second editor, you know, in 4 weeks, happy to come in. Turned out, you know, I guess they met several people, didn't click, and so I was back in town, and they said, hey, are you back yet? You want to do the meeting? I said, okay. So I went and met with Larry. And the meeting lasted less than 5 minutes, maybe closer to 3 minutes. I, you know, at first I was chatting with the other producers, and Larry walked in and said, you know, so why do you want to work on this show? I said, because I want to learn from you, Larry. I want to see how you do what you do from the inside. He said, oh, you can't learn anything from me. That's a big waste of time. You know, a few more questions, and we talked about The Mind of the Married Man because he knows Mike Binder, and how did that go? And then he left. And on the way out the door, he said, he seems fine. I had the job. So he goes from instinct. He goes from what his initial instinct is, from meeting people. You know, as well as you've got to have, I guess, some credits and resume and a referral or two. That doesn't hurt. So the first week was the same as the last, because I guess we clicked in a way that that works for what works for the show.
One more question for this segment. We'll come back, and I want to talk to you about, when we come back, we'll talk about The Mind of the Married Man, and you work with Bernie Mac, and you know, The Office. I want to talk to you about that. But earlier you were talked about that it could be very difficult sometimes to cut episodes of Curb, especially when there's all this improv going on. Is there some tremendous material that's been left on the cutting room floor at Curb? And are there great, on top of that, are there some great outtakes, outtake reels floating around?
Yeah, of course there's great stuff. We cut out a lot of great stuff at times just to cut it down to time, to get down to the 20, you know, under 30 minutes, 29 minutes and 58 seconds or less. But Larry is not really interested in bonus material. And so it's like, if we don't use it, it's gone. And maybe it'll come back in another season. You know, it's still in his head, and things have come back in other seasons that didn't make it, into prior seasons. I remember, you know, the jokes that were done, cut out, and then tried again later and worked better the next time around. Or working with different actors, you know, got cut out, and, sorry, we had to cut you out, just didn't fit, and then brought back for the, you know, next season. So, they're always favorites. I mean, some of the stuff makes it onto the gag reel that's shown at the rap party, but that's probably as far as it goes.
That's a shame. I know a lot of people would probably love to see some of the stuff that gets cut from that show. Just it's almost, not having ever seen it, it's still somewhat legendary in that you think it must be some great stuff that gets cut just for time reasons. So I'm sure.
You know what, Larry? The way he thinks about comedy is it's not about quantity; it's about finding the right fighting weight for the show. And so whatever gets cut out as a result to make the best possible comedy, it's really irrelevant, and it becomes unimportant. You know, he's not about just the diarrhea of material. It's about the best possible cohesive show. And if you see, like, he likes the shows that kind of weave around and bring you to some place that's a complete surprise, where everything ties up, you know, comes together at the end.
Well, let's take one more break. This is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to and hopefully watching the Mr. Media interview with a good friend of the show, third time guest, Roger Nygaard. He is third time, that's right. And he is the one of two editors on Curb Your Enthusiasm for season 6, 7, and upcoming 8. And, of course, we got to get in one more mention of it. He is also the director of The Nature of Existence, which is available in a much expanded DVD package, which I think is what we need to get Larry to do. So let's, you know, keep showing him that package. Maybe every time you see him, say, look, Larry, look what I did. We've got one more segment, and we'll be right back.
Is the sweetheart you married the husband you expected him to be? Has the war created new problems for you in your marriage? To answer these and other personal problems brought in by your friends and neighbors, Arid presents John J. Anthony, founder of the famed Marital Relations Institute, in a brand new program of daily sessions of kindly and helpful advice. Just as Mr. Anthony, by examples in this studio, is helping thousands of men and women solve their personal problems, Arid, too, is helping thousands to solve the important personal problem of underarm perspiration. Arid helps you avoid perspiration damage to clothes and safeguards friendships. Use Arid every day. It helps stop perspiration safely, and at the same time, Arid is a most effective deodorant.
Hey, this is Larry Thomas, the soup Nazi from Seinfeld, and I just want to say, no soup for you, Mr. Media!
This is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to and hopefully watching the Mr. Media interview with Roger Nygaard, co-editor of HBO's Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David, and director of The Nature of Existence, a wonderful documentary which we've talked about twice on the show, and I can't recommend enough. Roger, I also want to talk to you about some of your other television work today, including episodes of The Bernie Mac Show. I don't know, how many episodes did you do?
Two with Bernie, season 5, which was the last season.
Okay. That show didn't always get a lot of credit for this, but I always thought it was extremely creative in the way it broke down the fourth wall when Bernie talked, but also the way it was shot, the way it was directed. It just it always seemed to have a little more than the average network show.
You know, I'll tell you why. I think, in my opinion, I mean, aside from the fact, I mean, Bernie was hilarious, of course, and he did what he wanted, and the scripts are written with him in mind, of course, but nobody told him how to deliver the lines. He would take the script, and then it would come out of him Bernie style, and we do, you know, one or two, sometimes three takes, but only if there was a camera problem. I mean, the first take was great, and second take was just because you do a safety. So the third take would only be if there was maybe the camera lost focus or there was a sound problem. So he just, being who he was, he was so talented, he was naturally just funny doing his thing. But there's another reason I found, of all the shows I've worked on anyway, this show I had the least oversight as a director. They would hand me the script, and I got to shoot it any way I wanted. So I, you know, made my shot list and did some storyboards wherever there's maybe a little bit of a mini action sequence. But I got to really be creative, and that was encouraged on the show. They let you do your thing. And so I think that's one reason why that show, maybe, you know, in comparison to maybe some other shows, had that little extra something in terms of directorial creativity.
I know there's the shot that it's in your reel on RogerNygaard.com, by the way, get another plug in. I'm trying to visualize it. There's like a gunshot, and it goes through his video screen, and he just flips out, and it's like, okay, that the way that whole thing was set up, that was unique. That was special. That wasn't a Facts of Life episode. So.
Right. Well, he got his brand new flat screen, gigantic flat screen, while his son is outside playing with his golf clubs, you know, golf ball, trying to learn how to play golf.
But that's what it was. It wasn't a gunshot.
And he hooks one so sharp it angles off, goes right through the window and into the flat screen. And Bernie's watching for the very first time. He clicks the remote, turns it on, and then the ball hits it. Smash! He goes, "What did I do?" Like, he ruined his own, he pressed the wrong button, and he ruined his new flat screen. And, I mean, that was a really fun action sequence to shoot.
Now, tell me about that shot, because obviously you did not put a ball through a giant flat screen. And, you know, looking at it carefully, I mean, I could see it was, you know, it was superimposed an effect over it, I'm assuming.
Yeah, you know, that was a digital effect, and, you know, that had more to do with making sure the shot lined up with what we shot for the exterior, you know, where his son was hitting the ball, and so it would feel like it followed the right screen direction, which was kind of tricky. And one interesting thing about the show, too, is that if you watched, you know, the reruns, Bernie didn't like to come outside. He liked to stay within the realm of the stage. And so most of the exterior shots are indoors, you know, made to look like they're exteriors.
Really?
Occasionally we got to go outside, and like with the golf ball shot, that was an exterior, but it's not with Bernie, it's with the other actors. They would come outside. Bernie liked to stay inside. He liked to stay in this basement. It was like this perfect little world for him that kept everything just the way he liked it. And also, I mean, as you know, when he died, of course, which was a shock to everybody, it wasn't an unprecedented shock because he had been very ill the previous year and had survived, and so was very cautious about germs and working too many hours. He really tried to take it easy, and that was part of it, you know, to really reduce the amount of stress in his life.
And what was he like? It sounded like, I seem to recall reading, and I didn't brush up on this today, so I apologize if I get this wrong, but I seem to recall reading, he actually came to this part of his career rather late in life, that he wasn't always acting and being a comedian. This was something he came to later. But I also seem to recall that reading that he could be, you know, he could be a little moody, he could be a little difficult on set. Am I getting that wrong?
Yeah, I mean, some of it was, I think, part of his just an act. You know, when I first went on the set, the very first time to go to meet him, I went down with one of the producers, said, "Well, it's time for you to meet Bernie." So I'm standing off to the side watching while they're shooting a scene and they're doing their thing and they're rehearsing, and Bernie catches me out of the corner of his eye, and he knows what this means. I'm a new face on the set. I'm with one of the executive producers. I've got my little clipboard. So it's probably one of the new directors. at the pause between the rehearsal and when they're setting the lights, he goes, "Hey, you!" He yells at the top of his, you know, pointing at me at the top of his lungs, and I look behind me to see who is he yelling at, and there's no one behind me. It's like one of those moments. Me? He goes, "Yeah, who are you?" Hi, I'm Roger Nygaard. I'll be directing an episode next week. "Is that so? What are your credits?" Everybody stopped, of course.
Of course.
You know, I didn't see this coming. And I'm like, I directed, listed some TV shows I worked on, and my documentary Trekkies, and he says to his assistant, "Get me the box office grosses on Trekkies." And so, "Well, we'll see how well you do," you know. And so, you know, he enjoyed putting people through the paces a little bit. And then at the end of my shoot, which it's a week-long shoot, so about a week and a half later, I call cut on my last scene, the last take, you know, the final take of the last shot, and my first AD says, "That's a wrap," you know, it means time to, you know, go hit the wrap party, which Bernie would have every Friday, and Bernie said, "Okay, everybody, let me tell you something," and suddenly everybody's looking at me again. And he says, "I didn't think you were going to make it, but you did. You did a good job. You earned your props." So, you know, he was willing to give out the props when people earned it. And so you had to earn it with Bernie.
Very nice. Now, you've also done at least one episode of The Office, right?
Yes.
The grief counseling episode.
Right. Yeah. For some reason, a lot of my projects deal with death, and that episode was no exception. And I think partly it's because death being the most serious topic there is that we all face, it's by definition and the most funny. You know, the more serious something gets, the more we make jokes about it.
And now, was that before or after Nature of Existence?
That was before.
That was before, okay.
Because it was sort of during. I actually started shooting The Nature of Existence while I was working on the Bernie Mac show. I made my first international trip, which was to Israel to interview some people in Israel. And so it continued over that period of time, and so it came in the middle, because that was a 4-year shoot on The Nature of Existence.
What was it like going into, basically kind of parachuting in to do an episode of The Office?
Well, I think one reason I got the job is because I've done a lot of documentary work. I did a pilot for a show called The Results Team, which was very similar, and it was handheld, and it had confessionals direct to camera, and Bernie Mac had that. And so it was easy for them to make the translation from my previous work to this work. And like any show, you really have to – I've heard it described as the TV director is like a traffic cop. You come in and you help everybody get to where they're supposed to go. I like the metaphor of an enzyme a little bit better, where the enzyme contributes nothing to the nutritional value of what you eat, but without the enzyme, nothing gets digested, right? So basically a TV director comes in and helps support everybody in their tasks. You know, you can't really tell the actors too much about their characters because they've been doing it for maybe years and know far more than you do about the nuances of their characters. So it's really more about being the person to make sure you've got the right coverage, to support the actors and support the crew and get the project, you know, drive the train from point A to point B.
I was going to ask you, I was thinking, you know, sorry, you said that The Office fit your style, and I was thinking, in the last three seasons, the last 3 years, you've been working obviously a lot on Curb Your Enthusiasm, and during that time, we've had two more shows along the lines of The Office come up in the verite or documentary style, Parks and Recreation and Modern Family. It would seem to me that these would be perfect places for you to be working. Is it just that you've been so busy on Curb that those opportunities haven't been able to either presented, or do you need me to make the statement that Roger Nygaard should be working on these shows? Would that help?
But if you know anybody on those shows, please do put a plug in for me. You know, I'll take it. And partly it is, too. Yeah, I mean, once I sign on to do an episode or a season of Curb Your Enthusiasm, that's 9 months. And it takes me out of being able to do anything else for 9 months. And it's a choice because, you know, for me, getting a chance to work with somebody like Larry David was worth that sacrifice of other work to take this work. I mean, you know, if I could go back in time and work with Don Rickles, for instance, or, you know, whomever, you know, Laurel and Hardy, I would do that if I had a time machine. Today, you know, I told Larry this, you know, and he didn't mind the comparison. To me, you know, Larry, I thought you're kind of like the modern day Don Rickles in a lot of ways. And because, you know, he's a huge Don Rickles fan, so that was not a bad thing to say. And that you make choices, right, in your career. And to me, the choice was the chance to work with the, you know, one of today's era's, one of our greatest comedy creators.
Makes sense. All right, I've got to wrap up. I've got to ask you about Mind of the Married Man, which my wife and I were addicted to that show after, you know, one episode. It was like, okay, you know, at times it was a little uneven. Sometimes the writing was a little uneven. But it had the drama, it had the comedy, and of course it had that perpetual naughtiness. Because apparently the mind of the married man, now I wouldn't know because I'm not that type of married man, but...
of course, no.
Constantly, you know, picturing, you know, women in state of undress, women in sexual situations with you. I would never think about that. Never.
No, no one does. Certainly not politicians.
No. There's none of that going on, of course. So it's all fictional. But what is it, do you think, that... Why didn't that show get to go on after, you know, one season?
That was another great opportunity, obviously, to work with Mike Binder, you know, who created that show. And just a fantastic show to work on behind the scenes. I edited and directed on that show. And that, Mike said to me after the show, you know, after season two, you know, when the show had been canceled, you know, a year or two later, he said that what HBO had told him was that, you know, we'd done two seasons, which had done okay. The ratings were okay. They weren't bad. They weren't great, but they were okay. And the reviews for the show were mixed. And so there were raves and there were people that hated the show.
Yeah, I remember that.
Definitely a love it or hate it show. And so at the time, HBO was, they were very used to getting rave reviews for their shows. They had The Sopranos, they had Curb Your Enthusiasm, and Sex and the City, and other things. And so they were at the top of their game. And because The Mind of the Married Man was not a show with raves, and it was not stellar ratings, it was canceled. In hindsight, they did tell Mike, they said they felt they made a mistake. Because it's very difficult to develop shows, and they had a show.
Yeah.
They had a show that worked. And so you give a show like that time to grow, oftentimes you get something that really grows and blossoms and, you know, becomes something that, you know, stands the test of time. But you have to be willing to do that. And it's at the time, it was just a matter of, you know, like almost everything in life, it's about timing.
Sonia Walger was on that show, and then she went on to, unfortunately, another short-lived HBO show that had a lot of sexiness to it.
Coupling.
Tell Me Why.
And Coupling. She was on that show.
Right.
She was on Lost. And
oh,
yeah,
of course. Yeah. Well, I was just curious if you had any thoughts. Just a manly thing to ask. There's something apparently very sexually inherent in that woman, that she keeps getting these types of roles.
You know, she is the type of actor who, she's so smart. I remember when I was directing her in The Mind of the Married Man, I would wait to see what she thought, because invariably it was right on the money, and very easy to direct, because if you allow that. And she is one of the smartest actors I've ever worked with. Mike discovered her when he was making a feature that I edited for him that was called The Search for John Gissing, which he shot in London. And then, having discovered her, she was an unknown at that time here, obviously. He fought to have her on the show in The Mind of the Married Man. You know, it wasn't an obvious fit, obviously, an American with a British wife, and there's a little bit of an age gap. And so it wasn't an obvious choice, but she's so good that she was worth fighting for. And as you can see, you know, her career has continued, obviously, since then, you know, for that reason.
Well, you've been extremely generous with your time. I've kept you a long time today. So one more question and we're out of here. What is next Roger Nygaard? More TV? Do you have another documentary in the works?
All the above.
Yeah.
I'm editing a TV show called The League.
Oh, really?
It's some of the same. Yeah, this Jeff Schaefer, who's one of the producer writers on Curb Your Enthusiasm, and the next documentary is underway, which I had to find a topic even more perplexing than the nature of existence itself, and so the nature of marriage is the next sacred cow up for examination, documentary world-wise, and as well as I've got some other directorial feature and TV work in the works. So, yeah, you know, on the one hand, you know, the economy has been, you know, as terrible as it has been, what one thing that seems to happen is that people still want their television during that time. And so, which is good, you know, if you work in TV, the work continues. And oftentimes TV, you know, cheaper than other modes of entertainment. So it's a good field to be in during tough times, too.
That's great. I'm not surprised to hear that you're busy. I would expect no less. And folks, listen, season 8 of HBO's Curb Your Enthusiasm, with at least about half the episodes edited by a friend of the show, our show, Roger Nygaard, starts Sunday, July 10th. And you can still order the expanded DVD set of Roger's wonderful documentary, The Nature of Existence, right now at a great price at MrMedia.com, MRMedia.com. Roger, I know that there's the site, of course, for The Nature of Existence, but I don't know, is there something more current that you want to give out, a website or a Twitter or a Facebook information for?
I'm on all those things, but TheNatureOfExistence.com, that's the place to go, obviously, and where you can still get the DVDs and for the film and for the expanded version, you know, the companion series as well.
Very good. Well, Roger Nygaard, thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today. Come back for number 4 soon.
I would love to.
Be great. And folks, for more original interviews with America's top film professionals, you can surf over to our main website, MrMedia.com, MRMedia.com. If you've enjoyed today's show, you can subscribe to Mr. Media for free via email, RSS, or iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many parts of the Larry David universe. Show your support of Mr. Media by supporting our sponsors, including Audible. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/radio. Again, that's audibletrial.com/radio for your free audiobook. We're also supported by thepartyauthority.us. Call DJ Ira for all your party entertainment needs nationwide at 1-800-DIAL-DJS or visit their website, thepartyauthority.us. If you've got an idea for a guest to comment on today's show or would like to advertise on Mr. Media, email me directly at bob@mrmedia.com. You can also call our 24-hour listener line at 1-727-498-4711 and leave a message. Some messages may be used in an upcoming show and toll charges may apply. You can also follow Mr. Media on Facebook, Twitter, or our new YouTube video channel. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate you sharing a piece of your day with Mr. Media. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. See you next time, everybody.
Constipation can be a problem for anyone, even doctors. And when constipation occurs, it's interesting to see just what doctors consider important about a laxative they might use or recommend. Well, a majority of the doctors we heard from had this to say.
A laxative should be effective, gentle, close to natural acting. A medicine that can be used with complete confidence.
Now, X-Lax has been popular with many doctors and millions of people over the years because chocolated X-Lax is effective. Overnight, it helps you toward your normal regularity. X-Lax is so gentle, so close to natural acting, there's no upset. That's why many doctors and millions of people use X-Lax with complete confidence. X-Lax, the laxative that helps you toward your normal regularity, gently. Overnight.
Hey, folks, this is Mark Maron from the podcast WTF. And really, why are you listening to Mr. Media Radio?